closer.
Hi, everybody. This is the Pre-Accident Podcast, and I am your loving host, Todd Conklin. And for the next 25, maybe 28, maybe 29 minutes or so, I'm going to drag you kicking and screaming, that's both kicking and screaming, through another exciting episode of podcast history. Here we go. This one's a big one. I know I promised it to you, and here it is. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, success stories! Oh, I sounded a little like Oprah right then. If Oprah were white and male and weighed 325 pounds, that's what she'd sound like. Unfortunately, she doesn't, so that was just me and my impersonation. Pretty good week this week. I'm trying to think if anything good was going on. Lots of stuff happening, and as I always talk about, the weather was amazing, and I got a new sprinkler system in the lawn. So in theory, that should make my life easier, but it means I have to mow. But my lawn is so little that I don't even think you guys in the real world would call it a lawn. I wonder how big it is. I bet my lawn is actually 12 by 12. So it's not, you could probably actually mow it with scissors if you wanted to. So I went out and hunted around and got a call, I don't know, a couple weeks ago or so, from a success story. And it's a great one. In fact, if I were to pick sort of a textbook example, if I were going to make a case study of a success story, this would be the one I'd pick. It has everything. It has micro-experimentation. It has really courageous leadership. It has failure. It has resistance. It has success. And it's all done with a very, very, very sexy accent. Because the success story I picked up today for you guys is a conversation with a lady named Tanya Palmer. And Tanya is the senior safety executive for an organization called Contact Energy. She'll talk about who Contact Energy is. But suffice it to say that they're the big bazooka in New Zealand. They're kind of downstream, generation and transmission, all the way to the house kind of transmission. And they also do gas and power. A great size organization. She's going to call it small, but actually in terms of the people I talk to, I think it sort of fits perfectly right about where everybody is. If you're in a plant, this is a perfect number. If you're a big organization, this is probably your business unit. So the size isn't really a giant deal. And Tanya's going to really walk us through, I think, an incredibly interesting story of how for about the last 18 months, they have affected a shift in the way leadership manages safety, which has changed the way leadership talks about safety, which has changed how workers feel about safety. And so you're going to hear the story from the senior leader to the operator and everybody in between. And like I said, for extra bonus, it's going to have a really sweet New Zealand accent to it. Now, here's what I'm going to tell you about the New Zealand accent. You will normalize to this very quickly. In fact, by the end of the podcast, you will be an expert in speaking Kiwi. Yes, that's true. The New Zealand accent is going to be yours. In fact, some of you will probably go to meetings later today and actually speak in this accent in order to sound extra smart and extra knowledgeable in the sharing of information for your group. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time stalling before we get into the actual podcast, but I do think you're going to like this podcast. Listen carefully to the story of success, and listen how the story of success has some very, very, very important failures. And listen to how Tanya and the guys at Contact Energy manage those failures. So without much more fanfare and with a lot of excitement, I'm really pleased to introduce to you Tanya, and Megan's with her, just in case you're wondering, but Tanya, and Tanya's going to talk to you via Skype from Wellington, New Zealand, all about their move to the new view. Here's Tanya Palmer.
Okay, so on levels all seem to be good. It's recording, so that's a plus. So that's really a plus. So how was today?
Today's been good, really good. In fact, this is a really timely chat because we're in the middle of writing a paper for our board of directors around our safety learning journey.
What are you going to say?
Well, we're thinking about the last, this team's been in existence for 18 months, year and a half. So we've just been kind of thinking about what have we been doing in all that time? You know, where have we come? Where did we start? Have things got better, worse, or stayed the same, to quote you? just kind of thinking about all of that. And we've got a pretty good idea of our conditions now that are contributing. And they're really hard conditions. They're not technical things. They're generally, you know, those harder to see things like leadership and communication and, you know, resourcing and things like that that are consistently contributing to our incidents. So we're just kind of exploring what more we can do to keep going. So we've made some improvements, but we kind of need to keep going.
Walk me through how you guys started. What started all this? What led up to you thinking about using kind of this new view, this Safety 2 stuff they've taken to call it, for you guys?
So about 18 months ago, we kind of wanted to just sort of, you know, listen and understand where we were and where our gaps were. So we kind of had, you know, there was a lot of history with health and safety and contact, and we had done a lot of really good stuff. We'd got our injuries right down, you know, we'd got a lot better with our procedures and our technical ways of doing things, but we'd kind of almost plateaued a little bit, and I think intuitively our leadership knew we needed to advance things and that was probably more cultural. So this kind of, well, the role that I'm in now was created, and I kind of came in. I'm not from a health and safety background, just to get a bit curious about historically what was really good, where were our gaps, and kind of where do we need to go. So I kind of went out and talked to a whole bunch of people and said, look, you know, If I drew a line, a continuum of how good our health and safety system is in contact, and I had, you know, at one end it was kind of zero and couldn't get any worse, and at the other end it was kind of perfect, where would you put it? And lots of people gave me their view. And so it was kind of good because it overall gave us a view of what was the historical stuff that actually we really wanted to keep that had been working really well and people really valued. But it gave a really good sense of what wasn't working well and the gaps that were stopping us from really understanding how we could just take things a bit further. So, I kind of just had conversations with heaps of people, you know, our leaders, our managers, some, you know, the operator, you know, out on the power station, some technicians, health and safety people, heaps of people, really.
What's your background? Why'd they pick you?
I don't know. Gee, other good question.
Than, other than your amazing talent and your super intellect, what else was there?
Oh, yeah, that too. So I came from a human resources background, and I'd done lots of work in quite technical areas of HR, like industrial relations, you know, remuneration, performance management, talent management, done heaps of work on change management. So I guess they kind of thought I wasn't tainted with a technical view of health and safety, so I kind of wasn't going to hang on to technical health and safety systems, you know, with great gusto, terrified that if I lost them would be, you know, we'd all fall over and there'd be heaps of injuries. And I kind of, I guess, had a bit of a view from the outside and I guess reflecting from a sort of higher vantage point of, I could kind of see, gee, I remember actually before I got the role thinking, gee, I'd love to get in and sort that out. There's some great stuff there, but I can really see some of the culture and leadership stuff that's just not working.
I think that's really remarkable that they selected someone. There's a good lesson here for us in this, that really your expertise was in change management. and understanding the softer side and really moving from that direction. I think that's pretty remarkable. And I think safety people really around the world, the challenging part of this move into the new view is really the change, managing the people change side of it, not necessarily the technical side of it. So that's really interesting.
Yeah, and we've got a heap of people in the business who are really good at the technical stuff, and they've got heaps of really, really good knowledge. So kind of that was the last thing I needed. Although initially, and quite rightly, people kind of looked at me and went, oh, Lordy, here we go. What does she know about, and what's she going to do? So, but they've had faith in me, which has been great. And now they're, you know, they're right beside me, which is awesome.
Tell us about Contact Energy.
So Contact Energy is a New Zealand company. We're one of the largest electricity and energy companies in New Zealand. So we're kind of a downstream business. I guess if you're in the industry, you'd call us that. We generate electricity and we also retail electricity, natural gas, and LPG to a whole bunch of customers. So we're kind of pretty diverse. So we've got, you know, power stations, gas storage facilities, we've got drilling operations, and because we've got a big geothermal power station, and then we've got lots of lots of technical people, and then also lots of kind of retail people and our LPG drivers out there, kind of, you know, delivering LPG cylinders to people.
So a really varied portfolio, I think they'd call it. That's the fancy pants words for it, a portfolio.
Yeah. I mean, I guess on a global scale, you know, we're kind of tiny. You know, we're just under 1,000 people, so pretty little, but really spread out across New Zealand. We're pretty much those that know New Zealand go from kind of the deep parts of the South Island right up to the top of the North Island almost. So we're pretty spread out.
Wow, that's remarkable. How did you hear about this new view, the Safety 2 stuff, the new approach to managing safety through managing change and human performance?
Do you know, it's so funny, Todd, when I started and I kind of got this, you know, really rich set of information about kind of where our gaps were, what was really evident was one of our big clusters that we really needed to work on was leadership, you know, because as you know, the senior leaders have such a big influence on the safety culture in the business.
Oh, yeah.
So Dennis, who is our chief executive, and I had a conversation and said, gee, you know, what's kind of our next step on this leadership journey? And Dennis, you know, no pressure, said it's got to be something memorable, Tanya, something pretty big. It can't just be the, you know, the stock standard. Someone comes and talks about HEC leadership. It really has to be different. So no pressure. I kind of set off and thought, geez, where on earth do I find someone like that? So I did heaps of research, and Origin Energy is our majority shareholder, and they are in a joint venture with ConocoPhillips. So through this tangled web of connections, I eventually got hold of someone from ConocoPhillips who said, gosh, you guys need to talk to Todd Conklin. And so I think that was where it went. I got on the phone to you and we had an initial conversation and I got really excited. So did Megan, who works with me. We were going, oh, my God, this is it. This guy is the person who's going to help us. So I bought your book, got you out, and away we went.
We also did the HSC culture maturity order.
Yeah. We did a, just before you came out, we did a survey of our health and safety climate culture.
Right.
Which also helped. It kind of, you know, we do a general engagement survey, as a lot of good companies do, and the questions on health and safety were kind of a bit superficial. They were kind of like, I think safety is really important. I think my manager thinks it's really important. Everybody talks about it. And at that superficial level, it was kind of scoring 97% all the time. So you go, that's great. But there's stuff we're not doing quite right here. So the health and safety climate survey that we did just helped with a little more data to tell us where we weren't quite getting it right. So that told us that our two big challenges were safety justice, so the way that leaders were responding to incidents wasn't kind of hitting the mark. So good intent, but how it was being felt just wasn't quite right.
Right, right.
And people feeling that they were collaborated with and involved in safety decisions, they just didn't feel it at the sharp end. So that kind of helped too. Like, you know, when I read your book, it was all about that stuff. You know, how do you give the power back to the worker at the sharp end and help them feel really empowered?
So walk us through this 18-month journey you were on. So I kind of interrupted you, but I wanted to get some background. You guys are too interesting to not get background on.
So I guess the first few months was kind of analysing where we were at. So that's talking to people, getting a good picture, you know, convincing people that as an ex-human resources practitioner, I wasn't going to make health and safety completely fall over at Contact Energy. People needed a lot of reassurance on that, which I totally understand. Doing the health and safety climate survey. And then we did some leadership interventions. So, you know, we got you out to run some workshops with our senior leaders. And then we just tried some small changes. So really that's all we've been doing. Nothing big. That what kind of really hit us pretty early on was a big bang is not going to work here.
Yeah.
We've got to do some little stuff which is sustainable. And the benefit to that is if it doesn't work, you can kind of toss it aside and it hasn't had too much of an impact and it hasn't been too much of a drain. And you can kind of move on and try something else. So we started running learning teams, which made people really uncomfortable. They wanted a procedure on how to run a learning team.
Right. Engineers want that.
Yeah, and I resisted. It was really tough because they were really persuasive, but I resisted and kind of held them there and said, look, here's some questions, which I think, you know, your book neatly provides. Just start asking some questions. And I'm really proud of the people in the organisation and Contact because they've stuck with it. And now it's just kind of normal. We do it all the time. And, gee, we've got some really good learnings out of things. You know, people asking really good questions. Our contractors who work for us have said, gosh, really notice a difference in how you guys are handling incidents. They used to think, you know, Contact had very high standards, and rightly so. And by golly, if something happened, they would think, uh-oh, I'm not going to be working in Contact Energy anymore as a contractor. So they've noticed a difference. They see us working with them to strengthen defences a lot better and kind of exploring and learning, right, you know, something kind of didn't go right here. Let's kind of explore what it is. So that's been really beneficial. The other thing we've been doing is just constantly talking to leaders in the sharp end. So getting out and running, you know, just informal workshops, focus groups with our staff. When we find something in data, we go out and test it with them and say, this is kind of what the data's telling us. What do you guys think? Does it kind of feel right to you, or do you think we've just pulled together some data that, you know, coincidentally shows a pattern but it doesn't mean anything to you? So we've really been testing it and talking with our senior leaders a lot about, you know, the solutions aren't going to come from us. The solutions are going to come from the sharp end. And they've been really supportive of that. And at a senior leadership level, we've been talking a lot about what are the things we can do to really influence that environment in a really creative, you know, in an impactful way at the sharp end. And let's make sure it's something that's going to really benefit.
What's making your senior leaders so brave? I mean, what do you do to engage the senior leadership in the way that you engaged them? Because you clearly did something right. And, I mean, they were supportive. They allowed you to micro-experiment. And they kind of were patient enough to let things move slowly in small chunks, which was wonderful. How'd you do that?
So constant debate, actually, Todd, has been the answer, and just challenging a view. So I guess a classic example I had was around data versus anecdotes. You know, I got told really early on when I was talking to people and getting information, and people said to me, oh, you know, don't listen to anecdotes. They're not very important. What's really important is data. And I thought that doesn't feel right to me. They both I think, are really important.
Yeah. So, I agree completely.
Yeah. So, you know, I guess I could have gone passive and not wanted to rock the boat and kind of stood back. But the team and I just, we held the line on it and said, no, there's something here. And we just kept talking about it. What it got was our senior leaders became curious because we kept talking about it. And so we went, right, let's go pull some data that kind of backs this up and says, you know, there is something here. And the other thing was really challenging our senior leaders to get out to site more, to really listen and learn and understand and comprehend, you know, that what we were saying had some fidelity and kind of resonated. So one of the things that somebody told me a really long time ago that nothing causes action like a bit of competition. So we created a leaderboard for all of our leadership team, our executives and general managers.
Nice.
And month by month, we tracked how often they were going out and doing a health and safety visit. And we kind of said things like, you know, if you're going out to do a presentation on other things, and you've got one slide in there on health and safety, that doesn't count. You're not allowed to count that. So we kind of made a bit of a joke about it, but actually it really was great because, you know, they kind of went, gee, it's been 3 months since I've been out. I really need to get out there. And, you know, it's advanced since there where we'll make some suggestions about how they could meaningful opportunities to talk with people, because I guess sometimes they kind of might feel like they're going to site and they're just in the way. Having some ideas and really encouraging them to get out there and talk to sharp-end workers and not be hosted by management, because you have a really different conversation when you sit in the smoker room and have a cup of tea with a technician and go, you know, and ask them some good authentic questions.
Oh, absolutely. What are you guys going to do next? What's the future hold?
So I guess where we're at now is we've got a really good view thematically of some key conditions that we've got that seem to be contributing to our incidents quite a lot. And we've nudged the culture. We've chipped away at the culture for 18 months where it is quite different now. And people are kind of hearing it and they're going, gee, this sounds really good, but they're not kind of feeling it and seeing it just yet. So it's about going out with those conditions, because when we talk about it, people go, yeah, no, that is right. That is totally right. But, gosh, what do we do to kind of fix it? So what we want to do is get out there and talk to people, encourage them to sort of own and take responsibility for some actions that might help improve that thing, and then keep going back out there and saying, right, have you done it? What happened? Did it change? Is it better the same, worse, to quote you again, you know, and just really nudging and encourage them to change. It's really hard because, you know, in this environment, you know, we're a profit making business as well. So kind of, you know, you've got a budget that these guys, you know, these guys say, hey, Tanya, this is great, but I've got a budget. So kind of, I can't do anything too lofty, but I really want to change stuff. So, I guess giving them some, and that requires a lot of creativity to kind of help with some action that actually doesn't cost a lot. It's just changing the way you do things.
Yeah, which is amazing. What are some of those conditions you're identifying out there in the field that are causing, you think, that are sort of at the underpinning of events?
So there's quite a strong theme of leadership and communication. So, you know, silos between teams, you know, people feeling that they don't know what the priorities are. There's something, and it's kind of really hard to put your finger on it and nail it. But, you know, between head office and site, there's a dynamic happening there that we're just kind of not sure what's causing it, but people are feeling it. So really trying to nut in and work out what that is. But fundamentally, it's that kind of relationship between our leaders, and if the relationship between our leaders isn't working well, then it doesn't function well down to the people either. So really encouraging some open debate on, you know, what are the things here that are stopping us being effective as leaders, because it leads to things like not so great planning and everyone's kind of agreed that, gee, yeah, we don't really plan as well as we could. And if we don't plan as well as we could, then we kind of go into it a bit worried and stressed, and perhaps not having covered all of the potential risks of quite complex work at times. The other bit that we're finding is kind of that old chestnut of sort of competence and experience and resourcing. So because what we do is quite complex and, you know, training people on power stations to become fully competent takes quite a while, and it requires a lot of practical on-the-job experience and sort of verification of skill. But the same guys who are doing that training are also the ones who are kind of the go-to people. Because, you know, power stations trip, you know, and they stop working every now and then, and that's kind of not good because then people, you know, don't get electricity. So, you know, those same people that have to respond to that are also having to train people. So they really have this tension constantly of making that work. And so people get tired and they get fatigued and they kind of get stressed. So we've got that theme there. They're kind of the broad ones that we're really trying to focus on.
That's worth $1 million. I mean, that's worth $1 million. So here's the big question, and this one I think is an important question because lots of people are listening to this, and a lot of people are not really at the same place you are. Maybe they're a little ahead of you. Lots of them are probably well behind you. What advice would you give anybody who's about to sort of turn the corner from traditional safety, sort of behavioral-centric safety, to a much more organizational view, a cultural view of safety? What little tidbits have you learned that you wish somebody would have told you so you can tell them?
I would say, yeah, be really brave. Be really brave in the conversations that you have. And if you get resistance, don't stop, because you've generally hit on something if you've got resistance. Get curious and keep digging, I would say.
God, that's a powerful thing you just said. That's amazing. If you get resistance, it means you've hit on something. Ooh, I'm going to remember that. Thank you.
An experiment, you know, just try some small experiments, and that again requires some courage because it might not work, but if it's a small experiment, then you haven't done too much damage. So that's kind of, you know, to the heart of really what I believe in is small change. Lots of small changes will deliver some big results, and you cumulatively look at that, you can kind of, it's easy to build on and keep going. So I would say try that, and, you know, and go and talk to other people and get some ideas. Man, I've got some great ideas from talking to other organisations and talking to you, and it got me really excited. And I thought, gee, I'm going to try this. I'm going to have a conversation, and it led to great things. So getting really curious.
That's amazing. What did we cover it? Have we covered everything? Do we miss anything?
I don't think so. No.
So what's the weather like in Wellington right now?
It's beautiful today, actually. It's I don't know if you know about Anzac Day and the Anzacs
no.
From World War One. Have you heard of them?
No. Tell me more.
So it's Australia, New Zealand, Army Corps. Yeah. So in World War One, at the beaches of Gallipoli, they were kind of slaughtered pretty much by the Turkish army. So the 25th of April, which is tomorrow for us here, is a day that Australia and New Zealand kind of remember every year, where, you know, a lot of our soldiers kind of gave their lives. And this year is 100 years of Anzac, so it's kind of special. We've just had this massive parade through the city.
Wow.
Yeah, it's cool.
Well, thanks for your time. This was great.
You're welcome.
I loved it, and so will other people. Thank you so much, and have a great day.
You too. Thanks, Todd.
See you guys. See you, Megan. See you, Tanya.
Bye, Todd.
Bye-bye.
What'd you think? I thought that one was really informative. And for a couple of reasons. Now, I don't know what you heard. It'd be interesting to talk to you about it. But I liked the part where she sort of emphasized the ability to micro-experiment change. And the fact that she came to safety through HR lacked the technical background, but actually had the experience in managing change in an organization, I really think is probably an advantage in this case. Her bravery, and really her organization's bravery, is worth noting. But I think it's bravery that's built on the back of small wins, small losses. Because small wins and small losses gather great data, but have low resource costs. So there's not a lot of a, you know, sunk resource criticism or bias there. She's able to move changes sort of small incremental bits at a time and have a dramatic impact on the overall culture of the organization. And they're seeing that impact because their next cultural survey was very different than their last cultural survey. But what's really happening is that the conversations around safety have changed. And they've changed with workers, they've changed with workers to leaders, they've changed with leaders, and they've changed with their business partners, their contractors. That's really pretty powerful and probably bears more study. I don't know what you thought. It's interesting because when you hear people with this much excitement over getting better, it's really remarkable. The other note I'd make, because I think it's worth making, is they're really starting to understand the power of conditions over consequences. They manage conditions, they manage them early, and they identify conditions that they think lead to failure. And by identifying those conditions, they can actually manage the conditions in a preventive way before the failure happens. Remember, our goal is always to reduce the frequency and severity of incidences within our organization. We do that by understanding and managing conditions. And that's exactly what Tanya spoke of. A great podcast. I'm glad you could spend some time. Thank you for listening. Thanks for subscribing. Please do. It means a lot. Again, I don't know why, but it does. Tell your friends, because more is better. And the more people that listen, well, you know, the more I justify the fancy pants microphone that I had to buy. So there you go. See, it's all about that. Always, always, always have fun. Do good things every day. Try hard. Learn something every day. And for goodness sakes, be safe.